Welcome to episode 39 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. My name is Andrea and I'm here with...
I'm Andrew.
And we actually have a special guest today in the house, so go ahead and introduce yourself.
What up, what up? I'm DJ Vex Brown.
And he is... You might be familiar with him because he is in the Basement Tapes Phoenix crew. And we previously interviewed Ken, so DJ My God Complex.
True,
Vex. So you might be semi-familiar with Vex, and we've highlighted their events as well on the podcast that we wanted people to go out and see, which we'll cover more in a minute. And just really quick, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Our email is justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. And do you have any events that you want to highlight, Vex?
Actually, I want to highlight Shades, which is an event that my Basement Tapes crew does every first Saturday. So the next one will be April 6th, and that's at Third Space on Grand Avenue.
And what time?
We start at 8 p.m., so it's a good place to go and get your pregame on, you know what I mean, before you go to the main event later on. And or it can be the main event.
There's no cover, right?
No cover. And we're looking to feature some live local performers, coming up in the coming months is where we're trying to go with it. We're just starting right now, but yeah, man.
So I think it's cool what you guys have going on because, like I told Ken before, I first talked about it with De La when I saw you guys, like your event online. So I saw it and I said, these people are not from here because yeah. No one here does that event. And so I was like, oh, but I thought it was cool because it's like something totally, different.
Yeah, I think it's good to bring a different flavor to the area. And it's cool that all three of us are actually from different places, you know what I mean? So it kind of pulls in, literally I'm from the East Coast, Ken is from the Midwest, and Erica's from the West Coast. So it kind of pulls in like all of those reasons,
The different flavors that you guys have picked up from your, like regionally from where you're from, right?
Right. Exactly.
And that's cool. Yeah. So, we've actually gone and seen you play ones that when you were still at, was it Crescent, Andrew, right? Crescent?
Yeah, they were at Crescent for a bit.
Yeah. So that was cool. But like I said, I thought it was super neat because you guys are doing your own thing. But there's definitely a crowd for it too. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think we're finding our tribe out there, slowly but surely. Folks are coming out to see us and we appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. So go out. And so right now, and you guys, as far as following you for your events, it's Basement Tapes, if you want to follow the...
At Basement Tapes PHX on Instagram.
And then do you have a Mixcloud?
Yep, Mixcloud is mixcloud.com/basementtapesradio.
And you also have your show that is on Radio Phoenix, correct?
Yes, the Basement Tapes. That's actually like the kind of the nucleus of everything is the radio show, and that's on radiophoenix.org every Thursday, 9 p.m. to 11.
And so the way it works is, so do you just put the shows from the Basement Tapes Phoenix show on the Mixcloud, or is it you guys put mixes on there too? Like, what is it right now?
Actually, it's been pretty slow with both. But typically, I put the radio show on the Mixcloud, and I try to update it as often as I can. I have a lot of work to do as far as that's concerned. But I know there's a good amount of shows leading up till about maybe like 3 weeks ago is the last show that's uploaded on there. But yeah, it's mainly radio shows. Every once in a while, we'll have a mix, a random mix that one of us does, but mainly for the show.
Well, that's good because people like to, because we have the podcast, so people kind of will listen at their own leisure. They don't have to listen right away, so.
True, indeed. No, everything is on demand nowadays. That's, that's what people want. It's Netflix, it's, Spotify, everything is what you want when you want it, so.
Yeah.
Any way that you can make it happen is to your advantage these days.
Exactly. So really quick, the event I wanted to highlight, I didn't highlight the event yet, did I, that I wanted to do? I'm like, I don't think I did, just double checking. On March 23rd at Bikini Lounge, which is at 1502 Grand Avenue, from 10 p.m. to 2 in the morning. It's 21 plus and it's free. It's going to be Musical Pleasure for the Masses with De La, who we've mentioned on here before, and we've interviewed her, and her special guest is Steve Madeira. So I always hear people say, like, is there a good, disco funk night? And I'm like, there's actually a few, and that is one that people can definitely make their way out to, so.
For sure.
Have you seen, I know you've seen De La play, right?
I actually haven't seen her play. I don't get out much, honestly. Like, as much of a, like, music head, DJ, you know, record guy as I am, I don't really go out too much.
Well, I think it's harder when you have your own thing going on, too, because you're so focused on, like, trying to stay on top of your stuff. Right,
trying to build that. And then, you know, when you do have any extra leftover energy, you don't want to be kind of in the same environment all the time. So
yeah, gotta sometimes do lazy Sundays or something.
Exactly, like today.
And have you had any pickups lately? Like, where? What was your last pickup?
Record-wise?
Record-wise, yeah.
Ooh, last pickup. I went to New Orleans, actually. I just got back. That was about 3 weeks ago. And I went digging down there, and that was pretty cool. I had been before. I went to a couple record stores, and then this time I got to go to Peaches Records, which is I guess kind of infamous for supporting like the whole No Limit and Cash Money movement. But it's been there. The store has actually been there since the 70s. But I got to go there, and I got to go to like all the main spots. And then I ended up driving by what looked like a garage full of junk, honestly, with just a dude in a lawn chair just hanging out. And I was like, I got to go in there, like, obviously. So I went in there, and it was like, can I curse on here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was like some American Pickers type shit. It was like I had to lift a lot of things, and it was real dirty and real dusty. But long story short, I ended up coming up on this 45 by the TSU Tornadoes.
I don't know what that is. It's school list right now. What is that?
I don't know much about the group, honestly, but it's, I believe it was on Capitol. I think it was on Capitol. It was a red label. I wish I had it with me. I don't know. I'm kind of on the spot. But I think it's called Rounding the Corner. Rounding the Corners, I think is the name of the tune.
So what kind of style of music is it?
It sounded a little bit like a ripoff of Archie Bell and the Drells, Tighten Up. Oh. It had that kind of groove, but it was a little more grittier, and like the drums were a little like I don't know, a little more funkier, I guess. Yeah. It had a little bit of a looser feel to it.
So were you already like kind of familiar with it, or did you just find it and it looked interesting to you?
No, I had heard of that. I had heard of the group just kind of like in passing, the TSU Tornadoes, in my funk explorations.
So when you found it, were you like, hey?
I knew it was something. I had no idea what it was, but I just knew it was something. So I picked it up, and it was real dirty. I had to wash it with
Was it like a dollar? Like
alcohol. Oh, not even. I think it was like a quarter. Yeah. Yeah, I got some other record out of there, too. It ended up being okay. It was some Leon Silver's produced record, 12-inch from 84. But I don't remember the group.
Those are always the best finds, though.
Oh, Crystal is the name of the group.
Crystal with the K. We'll have to look that up. Yeah. But those are always the best finds, though. It's like when you're in a place you don't really expect.
Exactly. Yeah, and those are usually the places that I look first. Yeah.
And have we had any pickups? I don't remember.
I have not. I think the last thing we got was Duran Jones. But I am on a buying record break, so I will not.
He claims he's on a hiatus. We'll see how.
I am on a hiatus until the fall.
Until you stumble upon some vinyl.
I will only purchase pre-orders.
No. Okay, go on.
Pre-order stuff.
So if you walk by a yard sale.
I will not stop.
And you see a big crate of records, you won't even
love. He's lying.
Me personally, will not buy records. I cannot speak for Drea.
What were you doing this morning? What were you sitting on the couch and doing this morning?
I was looking at records, but
on OfferUp.
But I will buy equipment still, or like slip mats and needle cartridges and shit like that. But as far as
so digging a Jace,
yeah, just no digging online, especially online. I'm really bad about digging online.
Wow, digital it sounds digging. Like you have a really bad habit, sir.
Yes, I do. So like, digital digging is like my. It's like it's my vice, and so I'm like, I need to take a break. So till the fall, maybe I'll buy something here and there, but like spending like gobs of money like I have been, no more. Yeah, no well, mas.
I'll update you guys. I'll let you know if he does buy something. And I'll be like, hey, guess what? Let's give him a hard time right now.
I guess I kind of curb my like record buying habit by only buying in person, I guess.
Yeah, so that's what Drea says.
If I delve too deep into online purchases, then get bad.
Yeah. Well, I found two records from the same buyer and one like online, and I was like, oh, well, I wonder what else he has. And I was like, oh, he has so much stuff I want. I'm gonna buy it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna spend my whole paycheck.
Do you know how he justifies it? So he says, he's like, well, if I have to pay $5 for shipping, I might as well make it worth it. So he buys like tons of other stuff.
So I'll buy multiples
to justify the $5.
Yeah, because I hate paying for shipping.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah, that's his. That's
if it's $5, if it's a $5 record, and I'm paying $5 in shipping,
there's a lot more room in that box.
Yeah, you need I need to have at least three records in that box to make it worth my while.
Indeed, I hear it.
Yeah, I get it. Everybody's different, but I laugh. It's funny to me because sometimes people are like, oh. Like the days that I know he orders something when the days he comes home, he's like, hey, have you checked the mail? And I'm like, oh, okay, that means, you know.
Because he's like scratching his arm.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm like, we pay our bills online. I know you're not waiting to get a bill in the mail. I know and you know, in Arizona, it's hot. So you want to make sure that you get your records or don't mail.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I didn't think
about
that.
But when I think about it too, because there's plenty of times like, you know, we've been buying records for a while, so but we would order stuff online and it would come through even in the summer, and I never had a problem with it in the mailbox. But I mean, I've left stuff in the car before an accident, and yeah, that I've it's just like you can't use it at all.
Mini fridge on the porch. That's my solution.
Or just like at least like a temp bag. Put one of those temperature bags, you know what I'm saying?
Like the Pizza Hut joint? Yeah.
Put an ice pack in there.
That's just like the opposite. Wouldn't that make it hotter?
Nah, well, if you put an ice pack in there, it'll stay cold.
Oh, true. Yeah, I guess it's general.
I mean, that's my idea for summertime. If we're gigging, we have to take records, I'm just going to put those like in big Costco bags, all my records. Yeah. They're pretty stout. They're pretty stout.
There's room for innovation in there somewhere.
Yeah, so if somebody else does the idea after this, we'll know that they got it from there.
Fucking biters. Biters biting off my Costco.
But you can't say nothing. You didn't execute it. So
it's like, I'm waiting. It's not that hot yet. I'm putting those flight cases in the freezer.
It's recorded by audio now, so this is some sort of document, I guess.
It's trademarked. Copyright Andrew. That. All right, so do you know the number one song on the date of your birth?
In the year on my birthday?
In that week.
The day you were born.
Number one, like, in the country out of everything?
It's like the Hot 100, so, like, on the Billboard chart.
So, like, number one.
The top 40.
79.
Summer.
The Bee Gees?
Nope.
How many guesses do I get?
You can get as
many a few?
Yeah.
79. The Eagles?
Nope.
Do you want a genre hint?
Yeah. Can I get a genre hint?
It's more of a disco song.
Donna Summers.
It is a Donna Summers song. What song is it, though?
Love to Love You?
No.
Bad Girls?
It's Bad Girls.
Nice. It didn't take too many guesses.
No, it did not.
I think you're the first person that's ever guessed
it. Yeah, like on like their date of birth. And so we always do it. There was something on social media of like, the number one song on your birthday when you're 14 defines your life.
Oh,
so we do the date of birth and then 14.
Okay,
so I always do the top 10 because it just kind of gives you a general idea of what was popular during the time period.
So you can guess the number one maybe again.
When I was 14.
When you were 14.
So he's gonna do the countdown. So he's gonna count down from 10.
So we do top 100 because it's like top 40, hot 100. So I mean you can go like to any chart, but we just like to keep it real general because that's what everyone knows.
So I have to just name.
No, I'll do the top 10, and you can try to guess.
Well, he does 10 through 2, and then you can try to guess the person.
Ah, gotcha.
All right, so number 10 is Our House Madness. I don't know that song.
Our House.
Yeah. Oh, you know I know that song.
I think that's that song.
Yeah, that's that song. Number 9 was Styx, Don't Let It End. Number 8 was The Kings Come Dancing.
Wait, when I was 14?
This is
83, right?
Yeah, 83.
93.
Or 93. My bad.
Oh,
I cannot count.
I was like, wait a minute.
I'm going to get fired from my job because my job is math.
Oh, no.
He's like, you're aging me right now.
Yo, when that Our House song, I was like, wait, that was...
Yo,
that
I was a baby.
I was pretty sure. Wow. I was like two when that was
my
out.
My bad. All right. That was my fault, guys. I take responsibility.
That's July 8th, right?
I think I'll be even more confused about the actual year of my birth.
All right, let's go to 93.
I probably won't know any of these songs.
Okay, so we're going to do this live on the mic. This is the first time we've had this issue. I fucked up not too long ago.
Because, a lot of firsts.
Yeah, well, because I was like, I picked something and I picked like albums. And it was
He was doing the countdown. That's right. And he was named. I'm like, you're giving me album titles, not songs. And he's like, so we started going back and forth. And then he's like, oh, wait, you're right.
All
right.
Number 10 was Duran Duran, Come Undone. Number 9 was Exposé, I'm Never Gonna Get Over You, I'm guessing.
Don't know that.
Number 8 was Dre Day, Dr. Dre.
Okay.
Number 7 is Rod Stewart, Have I Told You Something? It cuts off. Number 6 was Robin S., Show Me Love. Number 5 was nice. H-Town, Knocking the Boots. Number 4 was UB40, Can't Help Falling in Love, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number 3 was Tag Team, Womp. Number 2 was Janet Jackson, That's the Way Love Goes. And do you have a guess for number 1?
Janet was number 2.
Nothing But a G Thing?
No, it doesn't do anything.
Snoop?
No, this is a slow jam.
It's a slow jam. Boyz II Men?
No.
I'm surprised it's not Boyz II Men.
It's a slow jam. Oh, man. Like R&B
slow jam? Yeah, R&B slow jam.
93. TLC?
Nope. One more. I'll give you one more for
Slow Jam 93. Jodeci?
Nope.
I don't know.
All right. It is SWV.
Wow. Oh, wow. Wow. That was number one?
I didn't know that went number one.
That was number one. That's what it says.
That's crazy.
I believe you, but I'm just saying I didn't know that went number one.
That's wild.
Do you feel about your number one? Because they said that's supposed to define your life.
Wait, what was it? So weak? Weak in the knees? Weak.
Yeah, I'm so weak in the knees.
That's awkward.
I didn't agree with mine either, so.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Andrew, did you agree with yours?
He never
says yes or no whether he agrees.
I guess I was kind of like up late on the phone listening and shit like that in the background, like trying to talk to girls and get my best spit game on.
So at the time.
So I guess it makes sense. I guess the slow jam makes sense. Yeah, because I was like coming into liking girls and yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
It's like, girl, 14, you make me weak.
That's about right. Yeah, I was trying to make
did
something
happen.
Did
you dedicate that song to anybody? Or did somebody dedicate it to you?
I never took it that far. Somebody probably had that on their answering machine or something.
Their answering machine. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so as some people, like I said, some people might be familiar with you a little bit already. If they're not completely familiar with you because you are in the Basement Tapes crew along with Ricky T and Ken.
Yeah, so, shout out.
Yeah, shout out to them. So as we know, and you said earlier, you're not from here, correct?
Correct. I'm from the East Coast.
And exactly where are you, what area are you from?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And so were you're born there, born and raised?
I was born and mostly raised there. I actually lived in Virginia for a long time, for about 13 years. I moved to Virginia Beach when I was 15, and then I ended up moving back to Pittsburgh when I was 26. So.
Oh, okay. So you spent a good amount of formative years in Virginia.
Yeah.
So was music, I mean, there's so much history in, I feel like, in Pennsylvania for as far as music goes, but so was music always definitely a big thing in your house?
Oh, yeah. Music was huge in my house. My dad was actually a record collector from the 70s. And apparently it was before my time, obviously, but apparently he was the guy when someone had a house party, he was the one that brought all the music. But he didn't actually DJ, but he would bring all the records. So he was kind of a pseudo DJ, I guess, back in, I would say, like the early 70s, mid to mid 70s. So he had a lot of music. He actually let me inherit his records when I turned 15. I got all of his records. Yeah, so that was crazy.
I would never
give my kids all of my records. Well, some of them I have. Yeah, he took some of them back, actually. So those records were always like a huge part of the furniture in my house, kind of, I guess you would say. because they weren't like in crates or on shelves or anything. They would always be in like stacks of, not like stacked high, but like stacks, you know, from the wall out. So there was always like a huge section of the room that was just records. I just remember that as a kid. And yeah, they would bump those all the time.
So what kind of music, so was it mostly like disco or like what kind of music just?
Mainly like soul music, I would say, and mainly soul and jazz, I would say. A lot of CTI releases. What else? There actually were a couple hip hop records in there. There was a Spoonie G 12-inch from Sugar Hill Records from like 82, I think. And there was a Sugar Hill compilation in that collection. But yeah, a lot of soul, like Temptations, some late 70s Motown stuff, Stevie Wonder, a lot of Stevie Wonder, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Gil Scott-Heron. I think all of his albums were in there. But yeah, it was a good mix.
So your dad had good taste.
Definitely, yeah, he definitely had good taste. I got lucky. For sure.
Okay. Yeah. So, you like you said, your dad kind of, without knowing, like he was a track selector. People liked his musical taste. So, did you kind of just fall into that too, or when did you start like coming into your own as far as your own musical taste?
As far as my own musical taste, I kind of don't even remember a time when I didn't have my own musical taste, really, because I remember being like, I had to be 4 or 5 years old and reciting like Fat Boys lyrics or Run DMC lyrics. I remember like writing whole verses down on paper to memorize them for whatever reason. That was a little later when I was able to write. But yeah, I just remember always being into music. But as far as buying my own music, I think the first cassette I bought was LL Cool J Radio. Was my first cassette that I bought. Yeah, so that was 86, I think.
Did you ever get to see LL Cool J like back in the day in concert or anything?
No, I didn't get to go to a concert until way later, until like the 90s.
Oh, really?
Like 94, yeah.
So when you moved to Virginia Beach, how was the music over there? Because I feel like, okay, so back before like internet and all the other stuff and everybody's online, so like things are kind of global now as opposed to regional. I mean, there's still regional stuff happening, but how did it differ from being?
It was way different. I moved to Virginia. It was 93 or 94. I think it was 94. And when I moved there, it was Wu-Tang mania. Like everything was Wu-Tang. Everything was about Wu-Tang. Apparently, Raekwon has some family in Norfolk, Virginia, in the projects there, like right near downtown. And so he would go there. He would be there often. So he had like a connection to the streets there and things like that. So everything was about Wu-Tang when I went there. And in Pittsburgh, it was more of a West Coast lean as far as the musical taste.
Really?
Yeah, oddly enough, it was more like West Coast and a lot of Texas artists for some reason. UGK was really big in Pittsburgh.
Why do you think that is?
Dayton Family was really big. It was a gangbanger thing. There was a lot of gang activity. So I think it was just the more street it was, the more people were into it.
And, they related to it more. They felt like they connected.
Yeah. They felt like they connected more. So I was kind of tapped into that stuff, being that it was around. But I was also the weirdo, artsy little kid. So I was into like Tribe and De La, stuff like that also. And I had a friend that was into that stuff. Actually, Bus Crates, he's a producer. He's been putting out some music lately. I don't know if you guys heard of him. But
I'm not familiar with that at all, actually.
Yeah, he releases a lot of vinyl. But me and him were actually in school together. He kind of put me on to a lot of music. Kind of put me on to like Black Sheep and Prince Paul and things like that. Yeah, real early.
So then you said you moved back to Pittsburgh in your 20s, right?
Yeah, in my late 20s. Well, when I was in Virginia, that was important because that's where I started DJing.
Were you a teenager still? Obviously.
Yeah, right? I was in high school. I was about 16, I would say. And I met a guy. I ended up becoming friends with a guy because I had a DJ Evil D mixtape. And he saw my mixtape that I was listening to. And nobody was listening to shit like that where we were. And
so what kind of stuff was on the mixtape?
It was a lot of New York rap. It was like Black Moon, a lot of Beat Miners stuff. What else was on there? It was a lot of like real gritty New York regional stuff, really. But he saw that, and he knew that I was kind of into music a little deeper than everybody else, I guess. And then it turned out that he was a DJ, and he had turntables, and he had the whole setup. So naturally, I would just be at his house like all the time. After that, it was a wrap. I would just be at his house, you know, whenever I could, practicing. And he let me, so that was cool.
So then, were there a lot of record shops in Virginia Beach? Like, or what was around there? Like, did you have to, like, go far to find?
There were a few record shops. Going back to the regional thing, Virginia, Go-Go was real big also in Virginia. I don't know if you know what Go-Go is.
I've heard it. Somebody else mentioned it. I want to say maybe it was Do-Rock mentioned Go-Go.
Yeah, Go-Go is kind of like hyper regional. Like you gotta kind of know about.
Cause so Do-Rock, he lived in Maryland, but uh-huh. he would travel often up to New York and like over there to like hang out and do stuff. So okay, I think okay. he mentioned it.
Yeah, Maryland, that makes sense. That whole area, like. DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia area. Yeah, they were big into go-go and things like that. So a lot of DJs that would play that, you know, there were a lot of record stores that would kind of cater to that. And DJ's Records was real big. There's a shop called DJ's down there. That's kind of a staple. And I think they're kind of like the last ones that are still around. But there weren't a ton of record stores at all. There were a few.
So you said, okay, you got started DJing. So he was like your mentor in a way a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Taught me everything I know. And yeah, he was doing parties. And then eventually I started selling mixtapes in school, like in class.
Out of your backpack?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would sell cassettes. And I would sell them in school, and then every once in a while I'd go to the mall and just like walk around and try to sell mixtapes.
So have you always been DJ Vex, or did you used to have a different
name? No, it was always Vex. Yeah, from the beginning.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Since I was, 16.
Why did you choose? 17. Did you choose Vex, or did someone else choose Vex for you?
I chose it because I needed a DJ name at the time. So
and it stands out.
Yeah, it stood out. I probably could have just used my regular nickname, I guess, but yeah, it kind of stood out. And at the time, a lot of people would say I looked angry a lot. Like, I just had a scowl on my face all the time for whatever reason. Maybe it was because of where I was from, or I don't know what it was. So I just figured, I don't know, I guess I look vexed all the time. So that's what I meant by name.
So what made you want to start DJing? Like, what got you into it? Was it like seeing, because I know like, you're born in 79, so it's like uh-huh. you got to live through the 80s, like you're pretty young, and like the whole birthing of like hip hop in the mainstream, was that mm-hmm, part of it? Mm-hmm.
As far as part of my
like what made you want to like be like, yeah, like I want to DJ, like I want to do that?
Yeah, honestly, it was like videos, like music videos, like Yo MTV Raps, and seeing Jazzy Jeff or like Terminator X behind the turntables. I just thought it was real dope, and I wanted to learn how to scratch initially, so I would like fuck my parents' record player up trying to do that like most kids in the 80s, and so yeah, I just had an urge to do it since I was real young, and I just wasn't introduced until a little bit later.
Yeah, it's funny because I think, like, I don't DJ, but I just like to play music or whatever for people. Mm-hmm. And what kind of piqued my interest because, like, we used to watch my cousin and I, like, Beach Street and all that.
Right, right.
And then I used to see, like, just watch videos and see people scratching. So we used to get my Nana and Tata, my grandparents had, like, this old Sony. It was, like, an all-in-one console.
Wow.
And, like, my uncle was listening, he would hate us, but he had records. So this was, like, probably it's in the 90s. But we would pop them on there, and my cousin and I, because it had the cassette deck, that was, we would record ourselves.
You record scratches?
And it was so
bad. That's so advanced.
So bad. So bad. It was so horrible. We didn't know what the hell we were doing, but my cousin swears he was better than me. And he probably was, but we were both so bad.
It's like, no, I actually made a noise.
Yeah, like, oh, we made noise, but there's actually an art to it. It's not just you're sitting there fucking up the record. So you started learning how to scratch and stuff like that. So did you start doing, like, house parties or...
Yeah, actually started teaming up with my friend Demetrius. Actually, his nickname is DJ, funny enough. But yeah, I would just link up with him and do parties with him every once in a while. And then eventually I got to spend some parties on my own.
So the first gig you ever did, I don't know if you remember it, but were you like, do you remember, were you like nervous or?
Oh, I was super nervous. Yeah. I don't remember exactly how everything came together, but I remember I was hooked up to like a house system. It was like a house party, and I was hooked up to like a home stereo. And I just remember the sound getting blown out. I just remember the sound going off, like blowing a fuse or something, and the whole party stopped. And I just remember it going real badly.
Did they turn and look at you like, huh?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, it was obvious what happened, because, you know, everything, I like blew a fuse or something, so like all the power went out.
So
it was kind of bad. I don't even think I recovered. I think I just left. I don't think it was like we fixed it and it like started again.
Like,
I think
I guess
actually,
I'm done.
Yeah, I think it was a wrap after that, I'm pretty sure.
So then did you just continue, like you said, to do like more house parties? Because was it, do you feel like back, like before, like I said, like before internet and all that stuff, mm-hmm. was it, do you feel like it was different? Like things, like the way things operated?
Oh yeah, it was way, way different. Definitely. But I forgot the point I was going to make.
You're good. So we were just talking about how you were doing the house party and... Like what you started to do after that, like other things.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, it was funny because I had to learn as far as how to separate styles of DJing, because I had no concept of like how to rock a party. Like when I started out, all I wanted to do was scratch. That's what I wanted to do. Aww. Yeah. So
he's over there.
Yeah. So when I
tearing it up.
So like when I learned how to, when I actually got some skills. The first thing I went to was like battle DJing. Like I would enter battles, and I was pretty good. I won a few battles. Like I would win gear. I remember winning a mixer and some needles, things like that. But so I would do that, and then people would ask me to DJ a party, and it's like I didn't know how to make it. I didn't know how to like switch modes. So I wouldn't necessarily scratch a lot, but I just wouldn't play the right music that people would want to hear at a party. And it was just, I just had no understanding of how to do that.
So what would you say, in your opinion, is the difference between like a battle DJ and a party rocker DJ? Like-
Well, nowadays it's kind of blended now. I think the two have kind of met somewhere in the middle nowadays. But before, I think it was a lot more like breakbeat oriented and just like a lot of hard beats and like breakbeats and not a lot of melody and groove so much.
So do you feel like, because like back then, so if you're going to like a DJ battle, like you're saying, you're looking for like the break beats and all the other stuff, right? But mm-hmm. then at a party, you're looking to please everybody there.
Yeah, you're looking to play like some popular jams and, you know, some party groove stuff.
Did
and
you ever
I had
play,
to learn that eventually.
Did you ever play Weak by SWV?
I don't think I ever got the opportunity to drop that one.
Yo, everybody's trying to dance, okay?
I play, what's the other song? Right Here? I'll play that one. I'll play Right Here by SWV.
It's a Human Nature remix.
Yeah. You got to put that one on.
So do you ever remember any songs back then, like in your early days that got the party going? Like everybody be like, oh yeah, this is my jam.
Again, Wu-Tang. Man, like pre-internet, like the 90s, as far as parties go, the culture of it was so different. It was to the point, like in like 94, 95, you would go to a party, and if the DJ put on Wu-Tang, Protect, anything from 36 Chambers, someone was getting punched, body slammed. It was a mosh pit. Like, it was nuts. Like
a mosh pit?
Yeah, it wasn't a mosh pit the way that you think of it, but it was basically a mosh pit, yeah.
People just getting wild?
People would go nuts, yes. And if there was somebody that had beef in the room, it was getting set off right at that moment. So I witnessed a lot of turntables getting knocked over. A lot of things happened. But I mean, it wasn't just violent. Of course, it was fun also. But yeah, I know that was a different energy. The parties back then, yeah.
All because of Wu-Tang.
It was a little more electric, I guess. The feeling in the room was a little more volatile back in the day because no one was staring at their phone. Everybody had to pay attention to what was going on in the room. So everybody's engaged. Yeah, I kind of do. Yeah, I miss that aspect of it. I mean, it could get wild at times, and I don't miss that part of it. But
do you feel like it was more like because you know how like the DJ sets the tone and the vibe, and they can kind of control the room? Do you think it was a little easier back then? Because if someone doesn't like a song now, or they're just not feeling something, they can be like, "Oh, I'm just gonna pick up my phone and I'm just gonna distract myself until I think I hear something." Out.
Yeah. Sometimes people protested a bit more back in the day, depending on how much the DJ was respected and things like that. Like, there's a lot of things that factored into it.
So did you, like you said, did you like doing the battle competitions more than the parties, or was it just you had to learn how to balance the two?
I liked battles more. When I was younger, I liked battles more, and then I had to start paying bills. So that's how that went.
So how would people recruit you like back then for parties? Would they just see you somewhere else and be like, hey, I got this thing going on?
Yeah, it was just kind of word of mouth. I would sell mixtapes, and then whoever bought one might ask me if I do parties or, you know, things like that.
So what kind of stuff did you put on your mixtapes? Was it just strictly hip-hop, or was it like R&B, or was it soul? Like, what kind of stuff?
No, it was strictly hip-hop, strictly hardcore hip-hop. I was like the most b-boy to hip hop dude ever, like in the back in the day. So yeah, it was all hip hop for sure.
So when did you started getting older, and then when you moved back to Pittsburgh, were you still DJing?
Yeah, I was still DJing. I was actually producing beats more so. I got into producing maybe like around 2000-ish, around that time. I started getting into making beats around that time. So I was more focused on that around when I moved back to Pittsburgh.
So when you would dig then, because you would dig, obviously, right, to look for stuff for your beats?
Yes. Digging, Pittsburgh is a digging paradise. Let me just put that out there. I don't know.
I hear that.
If any of your listeners have ever been. I've seen quite a few people quoted as saying that about that place.
So were you back? Because I know like the whole aspect of like the you make beats, so you don't want the person next to you or anybody else to know what you have. Like, did you ever have to be kind of like keeping your cards close as far as what you were buying?
No, not really. I was typically around a lot of knowledgeable dudes as far as records. So I was kind of doing the peeking, honestly. Yeah, I was kind of like trying to learn at that point. There's some heavy hitters out there as far as like record guys and producers and things like that. So I had a lot to learn, honestly.
So how long were you doing that for? Were you like doing beats and stuff like that?
Man, I kind of never stopped from that point. I started in about 2000. And, I still make beats from time to time nowadays. So, yeah. Funny story, though, as far as digging and not looking at records and things. So I start when I moved back to Pittsburgh, one of the other things I started to do was promote parties and shows. So I would bring like national acts. And so one time I had brought Large Professor to the city to spin, and he wanted to dig. So he came a day early. So we're going around the city digging, and we went to this place called The Attic. And he saw some 45s that were on top of one of the record shelves. So then he tried to, you know, pull them down so he can look through them. And the shop owner was not having it at all. He like screamed at Large Professor. It was a surreal moment. He was like, "Those aren't for sale up there." It's just like,
"Then why are they up there?"
Yeah, I was like, "It's a record store, and those are records." I don't get it. But yeah.
Was he all bummed out? Like, man, I want to see what was in there.
Yeah, he was a little bummed out for sure. That guy will sit in a record store for 3 hours and listen to piles and piles and piles of records like all day. I had to leave him in the store.
Yeah. Yo, it was even intense for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just looking for the breakbeat.
He goes really hard, yeah.
Oh, it's funny. So have you ever heard of, I think it's Matt Cassell, is it, Andrew? Last week we were talking to DJ Herm. So, yeah. Okay, so have you, I guess his stuff was reissued on Stone's Throw because he had like some infamous breakbeat.
Okay.
But basically, because DJ Herm, we interviewed him last week and he was all, dang it. He's like, "I totally forgot to mention this." So, but he said that he went to a thrift store over there in Tucson where he's from. Mm-hmm. And he always just looks for records. He's like, "Oh, okay." So he said he just happened to see this record. He's like, "Oh, it looks kind of interesting. It's a quarter. I'll buy it." Mm-hmm. So he bought the record. He went home and he went to go play it and at his house. And he's like, he said, usually what I would do is I would like get the needle and I would just like go through and see if I could hear something interesting. He's like, "It was a quarter, you know, I'll take the risk."
Right.
Well, he's like, there was something where I was like, you know, the record's pretty good, you know, I'll just let it play, but I'm hungry, so I'm gonna make myself a sandwich. So he said he went to go make a sandwich in his kitchen and he kept letting the record play. So he's listening to it. And he said all of a sudden he's like out of nowhere. And he showed us because he wanted his phone to show us like how the song was and then like where the breakbeat was. He's like, "Dang," he's like, "that's freaking, that's super cool." So he said he sent it to somebody basically. And he was like, "Hey, like, listen to this. It sounds really neat." And then the guy ended up sending it to somebody else who sent it to like, was it DJ Khan, I believe.
Okay.
And then basically it got around that way. And then they eventually located that guy. And all of a sudden that guy, like, he blew up because he happened to, and Stone's Throw, like I said, got a hold of the catalog and all this other stuff. That's
so crazy. So the guy was from Tucson?
His name is DJ Herm, yeah. Okay. So what's funny is that, so we found, he showed us the article. He's like, "Yeah, there was an article on it." So we were cracking up though, because we read the article. It was on the Huffington Post. Mm-hmm. And it just like, it's like barely, it just says, what did it say, Andrew? It said like,
"A record collector from Tucson." I was like, they did not give this guy enough credit.
He didn't get any credit.
That's so messed up.
And he doesn't care, but we were like, "Hey, like, he should probably get a little bit more."
He's the one that found the Rigby.
Come on, journalist. Jeez.
Come on, HuffPo.
I mean, the article.
HuffPo of everybody.
I mean, the article was about like finding the original artist, but I felt like they could have gave the person that found the breakbeat a little more credit.
So funny.
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting.
So what brought you to Phoenix or Arizona or maybe? Did you come straight to Phoenix or did you live anywhere else?
No, I just lived in Virginia and Pittsburgh. Actually, a relationship I was in actually brought me out here. My partner that I was with at the time was in grad school at Arizona State. So, yeah, we ended up out here, and I dug it. So I stayed out here.
You didn't ever think, like, before you came out here, like, had you been here before?
I had never been west of Detroit.
Really?
No.
So did you ever, you never had, like, a thought of, like, what's there, just cactus? Or
In my mind, when I heard Arizona, I thought desert and cactus. That's all I thought, yeah. For sure.
You didn't know there was like a little bit of something. Because how long have you been here today again?
I've been here 3 years now.
That's right, 3 years. So, but you said you were a promoter back home, right?
Right.
Okay, so how did you get involved in doing that? Was it just a natural progression?
Yeah, it was just a natural thing. I actually met a venue owner who was the owner of a really important venue back in Pittsburgh called the Shadow Lounge. Launched the careers of Wiz Khalifa and Mac Miller. Mac Miller was going to buy that building, actually. excuse me, a couple years before he passed. But I met the owner of that place and got a residency there, and I just kind of took an interest in what was happening in this space. So thought I would just, you know, try to promote my own thing.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So I know it just feels like, so there's, I've never been to Pittsburgh myself, but there's just such a huge difference because there's so much more history just on the East Coast, because it's just like everything started over there.
True.
Like
true.
The modernization of America, however you want to put it. And when you came over here, did you ever feel like there's no, because I mean, like, I'm not ashamed to say it because I'm born and raised from here, but like there's no sense of like, you know, where are the music people at? Like,
yeah, people are a bit spread out here, I guess. But yeah, I haven't noticed a strong music scene as far as musicians are concerned. I think there's one building. There's definitely a few local bands that I'm really into who are starting to make a buzz outward.
So your night that you had for a while first before you were doing the basement tapes things, and I think you still do it, is it Afro Heat?
Yeah, Afro Heat. That happens every other Friday.
And you started that actually in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I started that, I guess 4 years ago now, coming up on 4 years. Yeah.
So what made you want to do that?
Just loving Afrobeat music. I discovered it kind of late, I guess. Maybe like early 2000s or so. Just digging for music, and then I came across some African stuff, and I really liked it. Then I got into like Fela and Tony Williams and things like that. Yeah, just my love of the music. And there was no party like that happening at the time, so I just wanted to make it happen myself. That's kind of a theme, I guess.
I know, you're like, I didn't see it, so I did it.
Yeah, I try to do that wherever I go, I guess.
But that's good, because that's what we always tell people, because like I said, people here, because I run across all kinds of people, especially the people from here. Like I said, I will talk the trash. I don't care because I'm from here, so I'll say whatever I want. But they always say, like, we don't have this, or you don't. I'm like, then go do it. Like yeah. You know, go do it, or give somebody else the idea, because it's like you're sitting here saying we don't have it, but then make it happen, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's good. That's good that you do that. So how was it different playing the Afro Heat show here versus back in Pittsburgh?
I just think people aren't as educated or versed in that type of music here. There's some people that are, obviously, but yeah, I just think it's just not as established in this area, and people are kind of learning about it now. And I think that's the major difference, really. Kind of people were kind of onto it already when I started that event in Pittsburgh. So I think, yeah, I think that's the difference.
So do you remember your first Afro Heat event here?
I do vaguely, yes. It's been a couple years. Was it at Valley Bar?
At Valley Bar. Mm-hmm. And did you have people like responding? Like, did you see the crowd eventually grow the more you played? Like,
yeah, definitely. There's always a few people who are in the know in the crowd, and they kind of like get real excited because, you know, that type of music, it doesn't get much play in this area. But yeah, I think people responded just naturally, you know, whether it was something they heard before or not. They just kind of dug into it. It's real danceable, you know.
That's what I think one of the advantages of living here, though, is like, so we get people. So, like I said, I'm born and raised here, but to your knowledge, have you met anyone else that's born and raised here?
Born and raised here.
Probably not that many, right?
No, not too many.
Yeah, because I always get people to like, you're the first person I ever met. And I'm like, oh, really?
I was going to say Dega, but I don't think he was born here.
You don't think he was born here? Yeah. Andrew's not. He's from here because he's been here since he was 5, but he's not born here.
Yeah, I was born in California, but I came here when I was really young.
Okay.
Yeah, so like, but with the advantages that we have is like, we get like you and Ken and then, you know, Ricky T and Dela and Coco and all these other people that I've been meeting. And you guys get to bring your style, so we get to benefit from you guys.
right. Oh, it's an honor, honestly, man. Yeah, I love the area. People are pretty cool. Can't beat the weather, you know. So I'm just trying to, like, give back somehow.
So you don't miss the snow?
No, not at all. It's pretty to look at, like when you wake up in the morning and like look out your window, and once that moment's over, it's yeah, I'm good.
You go dig yourself out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So many snow stories. Oh man, sliding down hills in my car, like pulling the emergency brake and just nothing happening, just free falling. Yeah.
I've only seen snow once in my life, just once.
Oh, you've only seen it once?
Yeah, because I went up to Flagstaff when I was really little. So, like, I've been in, some people are like, it's snowing, like, in Prescott. But I was like, it was flurries. It wasn't, like, actual snow.
You know when it's snowing.
Yeah. So, I've only seen, actually been in snow one time. So, I'm sure you've been in snow plenty of times.
I used to have to walk to school in snow. Like, yeah. I don't miss it at all.
Uh-uh. I know. I had a friend that was from Chicago, and she would say that she hated it because she's like, you have to wake up extra early because you have to make sure your car's going to start. And I was like,
yeah, it's a whole thing. There's like remote starters. That's like a whole culture. People starting their car before they get in it. Yeah.
It's so you don't miss it at all.
Nah, I can do without the snow.
So yeah. Is it weird though being here? Because it's like we only have almost like two seasons and that's it.
Yeah, it gets a little weird. It can be kind of depressing at times when it's like, God damn it, more sunshine. Like, shit. Yeah, sometimes I want it to be cloudy, and it just won't be cloudy for weeks and weeks.
Do you ever go up north, like to Flagstaff or anything?
Yeah, I've hung out in like Payson and that area. I haven't gone to Flagstaff yet, though.
Have you gone to Tucson?
Yeah, I've gone to Tucson. I've been... a few places in the area of Sedona. I like it up there. It's nice up there.
It's pretty. Mm-hmm. So have you ever thought about doing an event like up there anywhere?
I would love to. I don't know.
You should do Afro Heat in Sedona, like outside. That'd be so cool.
That would be insane. I would love to do that. If I could make those connections happen, I would definitely do it.
Or have you been to Jerome?
I like Jerome a lot, yeah.
Because the people there are pretty, I think, more open-minded when it comes to, like, music and stuff. So
yeah, you could probably do something. Jerome's pretty cool. They have a decent stronghold on, like, the old 50-year-old rock and roller demographic.
Well, like,
that seems to be heavy up there.
You know the band Tool and the Perfect Circle? Are you familiar with them? Okay, so you know Maynard?
See, I don't know. I know those things are related to that place and all that. I don't know the story, though.
Okay, so basically, Maynard, who's basically Tool, like everybody just knows Tool, Perfect Circle, Maynard. So anyhow, he owns, I believe, a winery and a record shop in Jerome.
I've been to the record shop, yeah.
Yeah, so those are his babies over there, basically.
Pussifer.
That too. So he... does all that, so that's why there's that strong presence of that in Jerome. Oh,
okay. So that's his stamp.
Yeah, so you're like, that makes sense, yeah.
It would be really cool to DJ up there. I would love that.
Yeah, so if someone is listening to Jerome, hit him up.
Yeah, please.
Slide in the DM. What's your personal?
At Vex Brown is my personal Instagram.
Yeah, so. And
Twitter is at It's Vex.
It's Vex. Mm-hmm. So how did you end up hooking up with the whole... So how did the Basement Tapes come to fruition?
It was pretty simple. Like, they came individually. My team members came as guests individually. And they wanted to come back. So we just kind of... I was like, well, you want to just do the show? And they agreed. So I actually did the show by myself for... maybe 2 years or close to it. Yeah. Actually, one summer, I did it remote from the island of Grenada, which is like way down near Venezuela. I had to email the show on like the slowest internet connection you've ever seen in your life.
Slow in 56.
Did you feel like it was the 90s all over again?
Yo, it was so crazy. It was the wildest thing. Yeah, but I continued doing the show while I was there.
So and, were you there for work or?
No, just there. There was a friend there who had left for Brooklyn, New York for the summer and invited me and my partner to take her place while she was gone. So just took the opportunity.
Yeah, that's like once in a lifetime, basically.
Yeah, it was an experience for sure.
So do you think it affected, like, okay, the environment
I got
that you're
to
in.
Spend there too, sorry.
Oh, really?
So yeah.
What kind of places did you play? Like, what was the vibe over there?
I only got to play in one place, but it's all soca all the time, pretty much. Some reggae. Usually, like, older folks are more into reggae down there. But, yeah, so I did, like, a reggae set at a bar. There's a place called there's a kind of a C-shaped inlet kind of thing near the water where there's a bunch of restaurants, and it's where boats come in the dock and, like, drop fish off and things like that. So I got to play in a bar that was down there. Carinage, that's what they call it, the Carinage. But I got to DJ a bar. I didn't have any turntables or anything. I had to download a virtual DJ, and I did a whole reggae set. And there was a party boat that docked right in front of where I was playing at. So the speakers were outside, and when the boat pulled in, it was like 300 people walking off the boat. So some of them kind of spilled into the bar, and like, I don't know, they got to hear me play for a little while, so it was kind of cool.
Yeah, because we're like, hey, so instead of here, because we're like landlocked, not the party bus, but the party boat.
right, exactly. Yeah.
So do you think the environment that you were in over there, do you think it affected at the time the show that you were putting out for here, like when you were sending it?
I think it kind of had an effect as far as my outlook. As far as, like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe. There was a lot going on politically, as there is now, like, obviously. So it was kind of different to be away from this country and kind of be communicating from a distance. Kind of gave me, like, a different perspective. So I think that affected how the show went initially when I was by myself, yeah, for sure.
So you guys came together, and then you had your residence, like, you guys have your residency carrying on and stuff like that. But, and you guys are all Serato based, right?
Yeah, Serato.
So yes. You personally, so you, when you initially started out, obviously, because Serato wasn't a thing, right?
When I started DJing, no.
In the 90s. So yeah. When did you personally notice, since you were always out there and, you know, doing your own thing, when did you notice the big switch? Like, around what time?
It was pretty gradual, honestly. I think around 2001 was when I saw, before Serato, it was Final Scratch by Traktor, I believe, put it out. And that was the first technology of that kind at the time.
Was there controversy with that?
Yeah, I mean, amongst the purists, there was controversy as far as, like, is that cheating and... You know, I was fascinated with it. I actually got the first version of it a long time ago. And I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool. But, yeah, I think people were slow to move over to digital. It took a few years from what I could tell.
So do you, in your personal opinion, do you just feel like it's preference to whoever? Do you not care? Do you feel like
it's
cheating?
Oh, no, I don't judge anybody for... No, not at all. The only way I'll judge a DJ is if they're behind a deck with, like, an iPhone or something. Like, then I might judge. But other than that, no, I don't judge anybody for what they use to play. I've seen people do whole DJ sets with Ableton Live and all kind of stuff. So
do you, because I sometimes hear, like, actual DJs, like, say, like, I wish, they're like, it's all preference, but I do wish sometimes they would... other people, like, that are purely have never experienced, like, playing on records, that they would maybe just do it, like, once to appreciate all the work that it did go into it back in the day.
I used to say that, yeah, but now I'm just like, we're so far removed. It's like, that's ridiculous. Like, if someone would step to me like, yo, you can't play vinyl unless you had a Victrola, I'm like, yo, that, why would I get one of those? I don't have any 78s.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so I don't care.
I know that I've seen people. Some people get wild about that. All that, like, the controversy of, like, this is how you should listen or you should play, and I'm just like, you're not paying for it, so who cares?
Exactly. Yeah, vinyl's expensive, So, you know,
that's, you're all, shoot, that's an expensive hobby.
Yeah. So I can't judge anybody for not going that route.
That's what I always say to excuse me, people, is like, I guess I see, because I'm not like an, obviously like an old school DJ or anything, but I mm-hmm. guess I see their perspective where they're coming from. But at the same time, I'm like, even with like the digital streaming of music, so I get the aspect, because I mean, I started coming of age before digital streaming was a thing. Mm-hmm. So I get like the concept of like going to the store and appreciating and buying it and all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like it opens up the gates for people to like listen to more music that maybe wouldn't have access to it because they don't have the money to buy it. So I see certain different, but it does get exploited, because I also get the concept of like, okay, like the whole thing with De La Soul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're not getting paid. Tommy Boy doesn't want to pay them shit, basically. They're like, here's your 10% and we're taking 90. But at the same
split
time,
that 10% between three people.
Exactly. And that's really pathetic. Like, yeah. Come on now. That's not fair at all. But it's like, it's up to these record companies too, to do what's fair and not just take that 90 or whatever for themselves. Cause that's what people don't understand, like about the streaming services, like Spotify and all that. Like mm-hmm. they basically pay the record label, and the record label decides what the percentage is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, streaming is, I can see the evil streaming, but I also see like how it's good as well. There's like pros and cons to everything.
Yeah, it's good for like discovering music, I think. But I do have beef with the people exploiting the vinyl culture nowadays.
What do you mean?
I think there's a lot of people now who have caught on to people's, you know, preference for vinyl, and it's become like a hip kind of thing, and it seems like people are capitalizing on it, I think. Like overcharging for, you know, single release vinyl, you know, single pressing vinyl with like 10 tracks on it, you know, trying to sell that for like $40, things like that. You know, there's a lot of that stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, it's like maybe a limited release, like whatever, mm-hmm. a color or some shit. I mean, I'm of the saying that, you know, I like to feel special, so if I can yeah. get it, I will, but I'm not gonna pay so much extra that it's gonna make me go broke.
I feel like the market's kind of flooded with re-releases too. I feel like it's oversaturated with
so like one of the things that we try to get originals, because that's what you want. You want that original pressing. But if I can't afford one, my ass is gonna pay for that.
You can rebrand. Always afford it. Can you find it? That's the question.
Yeah, and that's the other half of it. Yeah. If you can find it for like, you know, some 45s are a couple cost a couple grand.
I'll wait years for a record.
Like, you're patient.
I will wait years, and I found records that I've waited a long time. I just found one in Tucson, actually. Jupar Universal Orchestra was a record that I was looking for.
What kind of feeling did you get when you found it?
Just clutch my pearls kind of feeling. Just like, yeah, it was that, and it wasn't too much. Like actually, when I got put onto that record, a buddy of mine had bought it off eBay, and I think he paid $100 for it, and I found it for $12.
Did you tell him?
Nice.
No. That was a long time ago. That was literally like when I got put onto that record. That was like 2007 or 2008, maybe. It was a long time ago.
But that's what I always tell people, especially the new people coming into like wanting to get into records, because to me there's room for everybody to do whatever they want. But I'm like, yes, you can go online and just pull the trigger on stuff and be like, I got this, I got that. But it's like, if you're patient enough, I mean, like there's one thing that I really want that I know that I will probably never find, but I'm just, to me it's like so mythical, like it's just, you know, I'll run into it one day. But like, if you're patient enough, you'll usually be able to find most of the things you want.
I think there's an advantage too if you travel a lot, and I travel a lot, so that there's that also.
Do you ever go because you just went back to Pittsburgh not that long ago, right?
No, it's been a while since I've been to Pittsburgh.
Where did you go recently? Yeah. You said New Orleans. Right?
New Orleans, yeah, okay, that's where I went. A couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay, I don't know why I thought you went back to Pittsburgh, but do you ever have, when the last time you went back to Pittsburgh, do you ever find stuff that, like, you're like, oh, like that you were waiting to find, and then you finally find it there?
No, not so much. There's a really big record store called Jerry's Records that I go to a lot. But I kind of find like a lot of staples there mostly, but not like Grail, Holy Grail kind of stuff. Not really.
Did you ever go to Philadelphia to shop?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. People think Philly and Pittsburgh are like right next to each other, but they're basically in different states. This is like, it's like a 5-hour drive.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, it's far. It's Philly's like almost in New York, pretty much.
So does Philly feel like Philly just overshadows everything else in the state because there's so much like history and all the other stuff there?
Oh yeah, I tell people I'm from Pittsburgh, and then an hour later they're like, "Yeah, this is Reese. He's from Philly." Yeah,
you're like, "No." You're not. I almost
people do that all the time.
See, because I remember I was like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then Philly, they're all peas. And then I was he's like, I think Vex is from Pittsburgh. I'm like, is he from Philly or
right. I was like, I'm pretty sure he's from Pittsburgh.
I thought when Wiz Khalifa blew up, that would have like fixed that, but apparently not. People still just say Philly when they
So are you a Steelers fan?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Die hard.
Do you have a terrible tell at home? Yeah.
No, shamefully I don't. Uh-uh. I should have a terrible towel. I never felt the need to have one. I'm definitely a Steelers fan. Like I've been for my whole life. But
I can't imagine what it's like going to a game there. Cause here it's like the Arizona sports scene is so weird, and there's a lot of like there's a lot of fair weather fans, but I know like for Steelers they're just diehard.
Oh yeah, it's a whole thing for sure. It's a whole culture. Yeah.
Yeah. I know Andrew's like, oh, the Steelers.
Are you a Arizona fan?
Super Bowl. It's totally
yeah, I'm a Cardinals fan.
Oh, you remember the catch?
I remember that catch. That wasn't a catch.
All you have to say is the catch, and everybody knows Cardinals what you're talking about.
Our one opportunity, we'll never get the Super Bowl again. Our team is fucking trash.
No. Oh, someday, man. Someday.
He's all, be patient.
I got that much patience for this team.
Anyway. My team's falling apart. So yeah, I mean,
it's your legacy team. It's so different than us.
True.
Because you're always going to attract quality players. Yeah. Like people are.
We've won Super Bowls in like all the eras.
Yeah, I mean, as a Suns fan, we can't attract any players to come here. Yeah. We'll throw money at people.
You had your heyday though. The Suns had their heyday.
Yeah, we got that stolen away from us too. Thanks, San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, we had two. So we had the Barkley, like the Barkley KJ and all that era, and then we had the Steve Nash era.
Yeah. Phoenix was doing
still came
thing.
Home with no championship.
So you a Sixers fan?
Sixers? Nah. I don't really have any loyalty for the NBA teams, really. I was a big Jordan fan and, like, Bulls, obviously. But if I'm being honest, no, I don't have any loyalty to any team. I like Boston right now. Boston's pretty good. I like them. I'm following them, what they're doing.
That's always interesting. See, you never know what we're going to go for the subjects on here, because that's what we tell people. We're like, it's wherever the conversation goes. It's not necessarily always just music. Like, we've talked about food on here.
Yeah. No, it's good, man.
Okay, so then now that I said food, so is there any good Mexican places in Philadelphia? Or in
Pittsburgh.
In Pennsylvania? Excuse me. Look at me.
Pittsburgh? No, not at all. It's all Italian, Polish,
Irish
German
style stuff.
Irish, a lot of Irish pubs.
So when you came down here, did you like?
I didn't like Mexican food.
You didn't? Do you still not like it? I won't care.
I like it now.
I'm Mexican. I won't care. No.
I like it. I like it now. When I lived in Pittsburgh, I actually went to Mexico once for vacation, and then I was like, okay, maybe I could get into Mexican food because this is like really good. So then when I moved out here, I wasn't averse to it. You know what I mean? I just kind of sought it out, and I was like, all right, I can get it. I can get
you
into
found
it.
Your spots?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Shout out to Yaki's.
Oh, okay. Are you talking about the one, is that, have you ever been to the taco truck right there at Charlie's?
Yeah, that's Yaki's.
That's the one in Los Yaki's? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Some of the best tacos in the city.
Yeah, man. They're real good.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you had that because that's one of our favorite taco spots too. Oh my gosh! So, I guess so. I'm like, well, I don't know. We fired Beard so far off, right?
We're talking about
tacos.
Random nonsense.
So
no, but you know what? My question is like, you know, so with your group, and like, so you said, like you said, that you guys all got like linked up through just them being on the show, right? Yeah, so what made you like start the show? Because like, you said you've had it for 3 years, you've been here for about 4 years.
Yeah, it was just kind of a way to engage when I moved out here. I just wanted like an outlet to play music. I hadn't had a residency yet. So yeah, it was kind of just that, a way to engage with the area, the community.
Mm-hmm. Who was the first person that you met out here that really, like, you really kind of connected with, and you're like, oh yeah, they're cool?
Alex, De-Gentrification, actually.
That of course.
Yeah, that was one of the first people I met.
When I think he gets everything that you're doing, like the Afro heat and stuff, it's mm-hmm. totally his vibe. Like,
yeah, yeah. I think I was, I was playing at Valley Bar, and I just went outside randomly at the end of the gig, and he came up to me, just, you know, how he does. Kind of like Kramer. He's just like rolled up on me. That's what it made me think of. But I met him from there, and he's like, yo man, like, really like what you're doing. And then I went and saw him at Lost Leaf on First Friday one time.
Okay, so the first time you ever saw him play, what did you think? Were you like, where the hell is this guy from?
Kind of, yeah. I was just like, yo, this dude digs deep. That was my first thought. I was like, okay, he knows what's up. You know, when you hear someone play their music out and you know, away from like the obvious like top 40 jams or whatever, but when someone goes in and like really is doing their own thing and you really get a sense of like where their musical taste is, you kind of know, you know, who knows what's up from there.
Yeah, I always feel like he's a good ambassador for Phoenix. Like he, like when people first come here, that's one of the names I always hear. Like, oh yeah, Alex Degens. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's so nice.
Wait, was he born and raised here?
Honestly, I don't know. Yeah, I want to say that's the no. Person that I want to say no.
Yeah,
I don't think so. But
he's lived here a long, long time.
Yeah,
I don't know if he was born here.
I'm not sure.
Gotta ask him.
We're working on getting Degens on the show.
I'm working on a date on that so we can see what's going on there, because I'm just as curious as you.
Yeah, that was the first person I interviewed actually for my show.
Oh, really cool. Yeah. Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's cool. Well, I want to say thank you for coming on, and thank you. Always say thank you for your time, because I always tell people time is the most valuable thing you have. Really
true indeed. Yo, it was an honor. Thanks for having me, man. It was fun.
For sure. Thanks for having me, like, just hanging out with us. You know, we wanted to get all three of you on just for representation of your group, and you know, really appreciate what you guys are doing here in Phoenix, or just in general.
Thank you. I appreciate what you guys are doing, man.
Yeah,
and elevate the scene.
Well, yes, that's exactly. And that's why I say we're like in Phoenix, it's such a privilege that we do get a lot of good people from all these other places, because we're the ones benefiting from it. Like, we're benefiting from you guys moving out here, because like I said, I love my city, I love my people and all this other stuff, but it's like there's just so much apathy, I feel and it's like, come on, guys. Like,
you just need exposure, that's all. Yeah, I think that's all it takes. And there's an influx coming to Phoenix. There's so many people moving here currently. So
yeah, we're just trying to spread it out. Obviously, we're trying to spread it out to the west side and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were at a bar last night called, you know, Lazy Palm.
Shout out
to Lazy Palm.
Lazy Palm.
Okay, Lazy. That place is pretty interesting.
It was a very interesting spot with some karaoke going on, and it was it was very interesting to say the least.
Yeah.
Word?
Yeah.
It sounds like there's a story there.
Oh, yeah. That is an off-mic story.
Oh, damn. All right.
It's nothing wild. It's just interesting. So,
But
like we said, we benefit from all you guys coming down here doing your own thing and taking, I think, the experiences that you guys have learned from your established communities and coming out here and trying to help us figure out what the hell we're doing over here.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, so just really quick, our IG is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Our email is justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. And go ahead and give your social media handles again one more time.
On Instagram is @VexBrown, V-E-X Brown, and @BasementTapes, P-H-X. And on Twitter, it's Vex.
And your, is it every Thursday, the show?
Yeah, every Thursday, 9 to 11 p.m. On RadioPhoenix.org.
And is it Radio Phoenix or Radio PHX? I can't remember.
Radio Phoenix.
RadioPhoenix.org. Mm-hmm. And then you can also follow them on their Mixcloud.
Yep, Mixcloud/BasementTapesRadio.
And we'll continue plugging you guys in all your events every week.
Thank you.
And letting people know when you guys are available.
Yeah, so if you want to go basically dance and have a good time and forget about all the bullshit from the week, go to Shades or any of the events, any of the Basement Tape crew has going on. And I'm going to ask Ricky T to come on too. I just wanted to spread you guys out a little bit, not have
nice.
You know, so much one after the other. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Don't stop digging, it just keeps spinning.
Thanks, guys.